Welcome to the Litigation Finance Podcast. I'm your host, John Freund. This podcast is brought to you by Litigation Finance Journal, the only dedicated news source to the litigation finance industry. Please visit www.litigationfinancejournal.com. Our guest today is Marcy Waterman, president of Sterling Analytics. Sterling Analytics audits billions of dollars of legal spend annually to help companies manage their outside legal expenses through a reliable and consistent process of review. Prior to joining Sterling Analytics, Marcy was a New York City prosecutor in the Major Narcotics Unit, serving as a felony trial attorney. Marcy also serves as Chief Operating Officer of Sterling Risk, one of the nation's top independently owned insurance brokerage firms, where she oversees the company's activities. Marcy, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love to talk about legal bill review whenever I can, so thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. This is really exciting for us. It's something a little different than what we normally cover. And just reading your intro, I mean, the Major Narcotics Unit, I feel like I want a second podcast with you to talk about that stuff. But we can hold that off for another time. For now, let's talk about Sterling Analytics. So first question, I mean, it's a unique business model. We'll get into that. I just want to know how you first launched this business. Like, how did the idea come about? And then maybe that first customer acquisition process. Like, can you tell me that part of the story?
Sure. Well, it actually was around in a very, very small way before I came to Sterling. Around the time of the subprime meltdown, so I want to say in the 2007-8-9 area, the banks were looking to cut expenses to meet the new stress test mandated by the new regulations. And our first few customers were big banks, where we saved them eight figures. And at that point, we knew, wait a minute, there was a business here. So we had somebody who was on staff who had done this before in another lifetime, and we had about two employees doing it. And David Sterling, the CEO of Sterling Risk, said, wait a minute, there's got to be a business here. And since our parent company is a national insurance brokerage, it just lent itself to working with the insurance industry, where the spend is in the billions rather than in smaller companies in tens of thousands. So that's how the business was launched. We started with about three, and now we're at 55 lawyers. So it's grown quite a lot in 10 years.
Wow, amazing. And is there an industry around this? Because I was looking, I was doing some research, you know, I did find like digital platforms, expense management, legal spend management platforms. I found a couple of those. Obviously there's like in-house, you know, people hire, like corporations will hire in-house attorneys to do this, I think. But I didn't find too many third-party solutions like your company doing this.
Well, that's a really interesting concept. You see, what happens is there are these major companies called e-billing, which is electronic billing. So instead of these bills now being generated where attorneys keep track of their time and they send out a bill, everything is now tech. So everything is uploaded to an e-billing system. And people had third-party reviewers who came in, but one by one, the third-party bill reviewer got eaten up and merged into the e-billing system. So there are a lot of auditing companies, but they're often just quickly merged into the e-billing platform. And we're probably the only legal bill review auditor that has remained independent. We've gotten offers to buy. We get offers, you know, once a month at least to take our team. But we have stayed independent because that ability to be agnostic allows our team to go in and out of any e-billing system. So right now we're in 11 e-billing systems. So we go in, we do what we need to do. We have credentials with every one of these e-billers, and then we toggle out. And nobody else can do that because they're all sort of tied to another system, but not us.
So why don't you explain the process to us? Is it you mentioned going into the e-billing, so you sort of manage the e-billing platforms, and you dive in there and you audit those, or is it more negotiating with the client's attorneys, like on the front end in terms of their hourly billing, or is it a mix of both of those things? Why don't you explain the process?
Okay, well, it all will depend on whether or not the client has an e-billing system. And basically, we're saying if you have a spend of over $5 million or more, you should be in an e-billing system. And those systems range from small systems that have just a really workable, easy dashboard and helps with reporting, to those that are these really, really major systems that do budgeting and help with AFAs, alternative fee arrangements, and do all sorts of things, tracking time, all the diversity and equity knowledge that needs to be garnered for certain different firms. So we come in, we Sterling Analytics come in as what we call as the first level reviewer. So if you're in an e-billing system, the bill gets uploaded and we are the first people that look at the bill. So the lawyers send a bill to a client. We get a notification on our system to go in. We look at the bill. We reduce the bill. We go back and forth with the attorney. So we reduce the bill. The attorney gets an opportunity to either say, okay, I'm okay with reduction, or no, here's more evidence to say to you that in fact this bill is what it should be. We either approve it or we send it back again for more appeal. And then when it finally gets done, it gets pushed to payment, and then the bill gets paid. The client doesn't even have to see the bill, or the client takes a look at it the first time, makes their changes to the bill, then it comes to us, and then it goes to payment.
And what are you using to base your bill reduction theories on? Is it like, is it just your knowledge of the sector and what bills typically cost, or are you using some sort of tech? Is there an AI algorithm here, or like how are you? On what basis should these bills be reduced?
That's a great question. So there's not a great deal of statutory or case law specifically concerning best billing practices outside of the fee dispute context. But that context has really given us some universally accepted standards for legal bill review. And basically in different industries, the market speaks. So it's not only what case law comes down and says is appropriate, it's what the model code of professional liability says is appropriate. But what's important to note is in law school, nobody is taught how to bill ethically. That's the problem. Professional ethics is a fundamental tenet of practicing law. And we don't question the ethics of the attorney. However, legal billing is very nuanced. And since it's not taught in law school, good practice is learned depending on the firm that the attorney is practicing with. And there are good teachers and bad teachers. Sometimes in firms, they're taught, if you breathe it, you bill it. Other times, firms are taught, you know, give your client the benefit of the doubt. Other times, everything is done is billed. So there's a standard that is universally accepted based on what case law has come down as to what's appropriate or inappropriate. So there are very, very specific rules that we abide by. And since we're reviewing, you know, at this point, it's almost $4 billion a year in legal bills. Our attorneys are very adept at spotting issues and being able to speak cogently to the attorney about it. And one thing that we're asked all the time is, don't the attorneys hate you? Isn't this an adversarial process? And it is not. Because the difference between the way we do bill review, we don't slash and burn. We don't just cut there and burn. We respect the attorney-client relationship, and we always give the benefit of doubt to the attorney. But when we do see there are issues, we believe in leading with education. So we will write in a very respectful manner why that invoice is being reduced and what the reasoning is for it. And there's case law backing up everything. And oftentimes the attorney comes to us and says, you know, gee, I had no idea about that. Thank you for enlightening me. And that mistake isn't, and we call it a mistake, isn't seen again. So it's not an adversarial process whatsoever. We're really looking for compliance to billing guidelines, which we can talk about because in my estimation, everything begins with billing guidelines. And if any company operates without a set of them, they are really making a tremendous error because that only adds to a lack of communication and fighting because you're not playing by the same set of rules.
What are the common questions or concerns that you get from prospective clients?
The first thing is, I don't want to turn off my attorneys. That's the first thing. How are you going to do this without turning off my attorneys? How are you going to do this without making my attorneys think that I don't believe in them or trust them? And that's what, you know, you talk about the differentiator. If you send this work offshore, let's say, and the ideology is to hit a number for reduction. We never make a promise for reduction. There are some firms out there who say we'll get at least 10% in savings. How can you make that promise? That means I have to go in and mine savings and find savings that in many ways may be inappropriate, but I've got to prove to the client that I'm doing my job. We say the best invoices are those where there are no savings, because that means that the attorneys have heard the client, they understand what the expectations are, and everyone is just staying in line within the guides of the billing guidelines. So there is no, I said before, it's not adversarial whatsoever. There are specific tasks that everybody knows what the rules are. There's specific billing practices that everybody knows they're supposed to abide by. But sometimes attorneys, they just don't know any better. Sometimes you have a senior partner doing what an associate should do, or an associate doing what a paralegal should do, or a paralegal doing what a clerical person should do. And clerical tasks are subsumed in overhead. They are not paid for by clients. So there are very, very different things that go on that people have no idea about, but they only know whether or not somebody is auditing these bills based on what is appropriate within their industry. And that's what a third-party bill reviewer does.
It looks like you have a lot of major corporations I saw on the website, Walmart, Chubb, as clients. Is this something that's for very large corporations, or who are the clients?
The clients spread across many industries, and I'll tell you, it's for the client with $1 billion spend. It's for, we take a lot of what we call one-offs. We'll get somebody that just comes off the web and basically says, I just got a $10,000 bill, and it's crazy. It's too much. Can you help me? And really, that is not a sum that we really want to help deal with, but in certain situations, we will. I have a real penchant for in the divorce space, for people who just get hit with these overwhelming bills that they just have absolutely no idea where it came from for individuals. So we do make those concessions and help people in one-off here and there. But the remarkable piece about what we do is that it's appropriate for any spend, because no matter how much you spend on legal, everyone thinks it's too much. And I just want to make a comment, because people will step back sometimes and say, wait a minute, you have lawyers doing this? Where do you find these lawyers? And something about a sweet spot is we found and we grew so quickly because there was this untapped resource in women. I should say parents at this point, stay-at-home parents. But there were many women who were attorneys who were on partner track who opted to have children, and suddenly they no longer were on the same trajectory as their peers. So in many cases, they had to make a choice, have a family or continue working in a law firm, literally 18 hours a day. And many of them chose to raise their families. And we found those women and we offered an opportunity for many of these stay-at-home parents, because now it's really been quite a bunch of men who've joined our team, who have made a decision that they want to be professionals. They want to be a financial component in their family, and they also want the opportunity to raise their kids. So we now are staffed with these tremendously talented attorneys who, because of a hybrid work environment, have this great life-work balance where they do the work, they give tranches of time, but they're still punctuated by the ability to bring their kids to school or go see a school play or give their kids dinner and still be a really amazing attorney doing a great job and being a contributing member of their family.
That's really great. That's terrific. And a brilliant source of, like you said, like a great way to staff.
And we are so blessed that way. And we've never even used a recruiter, because it's just a word of mouth thing. Because people tell people when they're happy with the culture of their company, they are so happy to share it with their friends, and we've grown so much because of it, and constantly growing because we can't source fast enough. So it's
Yeah, I was going to ask quickly, like, how are you getting out there, marketing, growing? I mean, other than appearing on this podcast, like, is a lot of word of mouth? People are, like you said, people are, they're very happy with it, and they're spreading.
What happens a lot is you'll have a general counsel or a chief legal officer that moves from one company to the other, and they always take us with them. So we stay with, you know, they're both on our website, so I can speak about them. So we were with Walmart. We had a fantastic team at Walmart. And then somebody moved from Walmart, went over to Tyson, and immediately took us. And it just went from, someone went from a major REIT in Manhattan, went over to Peloton, took us. So it's literally just spread that way because the legal community at that top level of GC, chief legal officer, chief procurement officer, is very small. Everyone travels in the same circles and goes to the same conferences, and it just spreads person to person.
That's great.
And because it's a free service, like I say this all the time, it's literally a free service because we're never charging you more than we're saving you. And we're always going to save you more because it's our mantra, because it has to be worth it for you. But the price is so low and the savings are always so much higher because there's always a need for more compliance based on whether the time comes down to, you know, reevaluating where the time is spent. But although we never mind for savings, that is what we promise all of our clients.
It's really great, Marcy. I really I saw this business. I was like, oh, this is something so interesting and so unique. And it's not litigation finance, but it's managing legal spend. And from those GC's perspective and those corporations' perspective, you know what? If they're thinking about that as often as you say they are, which is all the time, clearly, you know, they're going to have more and more of an interest in litigation finance, which will help them manage their legal spend just in a different way. So it's great to have you on and to learn more about Sterling Analytics. If you are all interested in learning more about Sterling Analytics, please visit them at their website, www.sterlinganalytics.com. That's Sterling analytics.com. And Marcy, thanks again for coming on here and sharing all your thoughts with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, John. This was wonderful. I appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Litigation Finance Podcast.